Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hey, so before we get started, I wanted to talk to you guys about Disney Plus. Now, I know by now you've probably heard about Disney Plus, the new streaming service that includes Disney, Pixar, Marvel, Star Wars, and National Geographic. With all these amazing brands in one place, Disney Plus has one of the most incredible libraries in the entire streaming landscape, and it's all ad-free. From classics like Snow White to today's blockbusters like Captain Marvel and Avengers Endgame, the content on Disney Plus is truly unparalleled. And if all that isn't enough, Disney Plus even has originals like The Mandalorian, the first live-action Star Wars series. So don't miss out. Go and sign up today and start streaming and tell them Hayes sent you. What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another episode of the Awakened Soul Podcast. It's your boy CEO Hayes back for another week. For any first time listeners, you can go ahead off the top. I want you to follow the podcast at Awakened Soul Pod or at the Awakened Soul Pod, just depending on what platform you're looking for us at. You can follow me personally at CEO Haize. And also go and subscribe to our YouTube channel as well. I finally made the decision of like what I want to do. So yeah, my podcast episodes, the videos are broken up and posted on YouTube as well, but I'm going to start doing some exclusive stuff there. So yeah, I finally kind of gotten that together on what I want to turn and how I want to better use my YouTube channel as something a little bit more exclusive. So that's going on. But nonetheless, what's going on, everybody? As everyone knows, if you haven't been paying attention to my social media, by the time you're listening to this, or by the time this drops, I should say, because you can listen to it whenever, my 3rd year anniversary will actually be the next day. It's actually August 4th is my 3rd year anniversary. So we'll be dropping a special episode on August 4th as well. That one's going to be a little bit more introspective, shorter episode, but just want everyone to be on the lookout for that as well. But this week's episode, we have a guest. We have Mr. James Jackson in the building, who is a photographer, a director. He does a bunch of stuff creatively with video. We get into a chat about cameras, but before that we talk about like being entrepreneurs and how to get into it, and how like this season of like being in quarantine has helped people kind of find their creativity and stuff like that. The camera talk is at the end, so if that gets a little bit too nerdy for you, I understand. And I have kind of changed the End of Mine and Hayes segment a little bit more to kind of adapt to the fact that I know the main discussion topic gets really techie. It gets really, really techie. We also got, of course, Tia's back with the Cookie Chronicles. So we got all that going on this week. We're going to go ahead. We're going to get into our intro music. On the other side of that, we're going to jump into my dark and twisted, crazy ass mind. I'll see you guys there.
The following is a Breaks Media podcast.
You are now listening to the best podcast in the world, The Awakened Soul, hosted by my dad.
Alright, what's going on? So, we're in my dark and twisted crazy ass mind, and so, of course, I can't even lie. Like, I had, like, some other topics and whatever, but this is the End of Mine and Hayes segment. So, I wanted to make it truly about what's on my mind. And so, as we prepare for our 3rd year anniversary show and our 3rd year anniversary in general, what's been on my mind is the thing that I think separates me, right? And the thing that gets pointed out a lot about me is consistency. I have, on just the Awakened Soul, in the 3 years that I've done this, have released just about 180 episodes. And so that's just this podcast. As everyone knows, I have multiple podcasts and everything. So, like, what has allowed me to do that? What has helped me to, like, never get burnt out, never kind of fuzzle? I've only missed 2 weeks in that time, two complete weeks where I didn't drop an episode. And one was for my mental health. Another one was for depression. Go and listen to that. I'm not going to get into that in a while. I'm not going to bring down the mood here. But other than that, I've have released, and as you can see, because we're at damn near 180 episodes in 3 years, which episode, the special anniversary episode, will be our 180th episode right at 3 years. As you can see, that's more episodes than weeks in the amount of time we've been around. And so what's gotten me through that is consistency. And so, you know, that's what gets pointed out. I'm consistent. Even if I drop an episode late, I drop it. And really, up until 2020, I had been the model of consistency. I had dropped all my episodes Sunday evenings. Then we moved to Mondays. And last couple weeks has been Tuesdays. But some of that is just due to, A, kind of my schedule adjusting and other things going on. But I have been, for the most part, the model of consistency. And so I wanted to talk about that during the In the Mind of Hayes segment, is why consistency, I feel consistency is important, but also, like, what gets me through and helps me stay consistent. So the first thing, like, I'm thinking about this, and like, why, as like a culture, it's like consistency is you know, we got color people time. I've worked with podcasters in my 3 years of doing this that consistency has hurt them. It has hurt them. I know some people feel like not dropping episodes every week doesn't hurt them. And the thing is, in your loyal listeners, it doesn't. You can drop whenever. People are loyal if they're going to be loyal. But in the sense of continuing to gain and grow your platform, consistency is at the utmost importance. When new subscribers come to your podcast and they see, oh, well, they've dropped like 2 episodes in the last 3 months, and if you're not a monthly podcast, the way that people consume information now, and everybody wants it when they want it, and the fact that there are so many podcasts in this space now that cover so many of the same topics, that it makes it easy. And you always want, in my opinion, what I try to do is I like to be the appointment for people, right? I want whoever listens to the Awakened Soul to know when they go on their Monday morning jog, the Awakened Soul is going to be there. And I think that that's helped it, but that's also helped me grow in the sense that because of the consistency, they feel comfortable, the consistency and the quality, which quality is something we're actually going, the one main like discussion topic I have for the anniversary episode is quality. So we'll talk about that. But I think those two things have definitely helped me continue to grow to where I am. And let me say, like, I had June, I had the most successful month that I've ever had in my history of podcasting, almost 40,000 downloads in the 30-day stretch there, which is just amazing. That's not normal for us, so I'm not going to act, and I haven't seen, like, July's yet, so I don't know where we fell with July, but I think the fact that of what we were able to do and why we're able to get to the point that I have been able to is consistency. And some things of this podcast have changed. The topics have changed from week to week. The style changes from week to week. That stuff isn't static. So that changes. And I think that definitely helps as well, because you get so many different flavors from the Awakened Soul. Shout out to everyone across the way. You know, guys know Scoop Grady had a segment on the Awakened Soul at one point. Shout out to my boy JB. He had a segment on the Awakened Soul at one point. Shanice has had a consistent segment on the episode on the podcast at one point. Hell, I had the stupid idiot of the week segment that I got rid of at one point. So, like, we've had things that have changed and adapted and kind of did and didn't work that we've had to make adjustments to over the course of the podcast. But the one thing is that the topics, the style, like, the even when we have, like, sillier episodes and we're not as deep as we tend to be, the consistency of the Awakened Soul has been there. And people have bought into me as a brand, this podcast as a brand, and they trust me, which it still blows my fucking mind. But consistency is something that I appreciate that I've been able to have, because, and we'll talk about why, like, the reason why it's easy for me to stay consistent with this podcast is because, A, it's my therapy. When I don't do it, I feel off. But outside of just it being my therapy, like, I have the honest drive to continue to do this. And so You guys know I like my list, right? I've said this before. I like my list. So I think like reasons why I think it's hard for sometimes for us to stay consistent. And I'll say me too, because there are times where I'm not consistent about everything like I am with this. So I think the lack of patience is one. To be consistent and to do something every week does take a level of detail, a level of patience to get it done, because life gets hectic and life gets hard and it's easy to kind of let things fall by the wayside. Also, one reason why people struggle for consistency is they need instant gratification. And I won't call out any names, but there are some podcasters in this who have a hard time staying consistent with their podcast, with their creation, with their creativity, because they want that instant gratification. They want that instant big download number that tells, that says to them they're doing big, and they chase numbers. When if you don't chase numbers, it's easier to be consistent if you know what you're doing and you're passionate about what you're doing. I will never tell anyone to pick a topic, a subject, or anything else just because it's going to be something that gets them easy numbers. It has to be something that they are actually passionate about. That's what's going to help with being consistent. So you have to get rid of that instant gratification, because it's not going to come. The if your gratification is the numbers, if it's engagement, if it whatever it is, that's going to come from consistency. You can't base your consistency off getting that or wanting that right away. Number three, lack of clarity and focus. If you don't have a clear reason why you're doing what you're doing, if you're not focused on what you're on what you're doing or what your goal is, it's easy to not stay consistent. You have to have that clarity and focus in what you do. Like, one thing that I will say, while our topics change every week, while sometimes the style changes every week, one week I could be silly, one week I'm really serious, I could be goofy, while all of that may not be stagnant, the fact is that I know why I'm doing what I'm doing. I have a clear vision of what I want to do with the E-Way Consultant and the people that I want to reach with it. And I'm focused on getting there by any means necessary. Adding so much stuff to the podcast over the last year, specifically with video and everything. Like, if I didn't have clarity on where I wanted to go and I wasn't focused on that, it would have been hard as fuck to stay consistent. So that's helped me as well. Not having supporting habits or triggers. That's a big thing, right? If you don't have the habits that you need to be consistent, you won't be. Like, you have to build everything in a habit. I'm someone who, I say, if I don't do it right then and there, if I don't build it into my routine, I won't stay consistent. And, you know, I know some things shouldn't feel routine because people lose interest when they feel like they're in a routine. But again, you have to, that's why the clarity and focus has to be there, because if you're focused and you have a clear vision of what you're doing, then the building it into a routine and making it a habit does not become negative. You got to build that muscle up. Number five on why it's hard to stay consistent, having an all or nothing mindset. I can't stress enough how many people have that either they're doing great or fuck it, I'm not going to do it mindset. And that's not going to get you very far or very many places at all. So have that, having that all or nothing mindset hurts. It's going to be in this podcasting game, in this creative game, there's going to be ups, there's going to be downs. You have to learn how to take stuff in stride. You have to know how to go with the flow. You also have to learn how to cut what doesn't work. I've said before, sometimes failing is better than succeeding for me personally, because when I do, it gets me excited, right? Because something didn't go or didn't come over the way that I thought it was. It didn't have the success that I thought it was. Now I have to go back to the drawing board. And that drawing board for me is such a therapeutic thing that I love having those moments of having to go back to the drawing board. So you have to have that mindset to get into it. So why is being consistent important in podcasting? I think I've already kind of said it. I said that, you know, it does help your audience. It helps grows it. It helps helps get you to where you want to be. It helps you to improve things. There's so many things is that. But ultimately, I think being consistent, it makes you accountable for it. Right. Because if you are not consistent in what you do, if you don't hold yourself to being consistent in the things that you do and accountable in that, it's bad business. You have to, consistency is important because it does hold you accountable. You know, if you are striving to do something consistently, if it's a consistent quality, if it's not a consistent, again, when I talk about consistency in this podcasting game, I don't just mean dropping an episode every week or whatever if your schedule is. I mean consistent in your quality as well. We all have those, sometimes those fluffer episodes, right? And I talked about it, get the fluff out, go and listen to it if you want to kind of go there with it. But I think We got to hold ourselves accountable to whatever you want to be consistent in this podcast game. If you know you can't nail down and you say, look, I know I can't be consistent doing this weekly. I know I can't. There are going to be some weeks where I want to do it weekly, but I can be consistent to saying I'm going to do it 2 times a month. Hold yourself to that consistency, but you got to be accountable for that, whatever you say. Or again, if it's not a time frame, if it's a more of a quality thing, if it's every time I drop an episode, I want to have the music, the sound effects, top fucking notch. I want my sound quality to be amazing. If those are the things that you want to be consistent about, hold yourself accountable to it and then build and grow that muscle. And then ultimately, I think just more than anything, it definitely helps you get noticed. When they see and get that notification every time, every week, I should say, or every however often, or if they listen to your episode, like I said, if your consistent thing you're going to hold yourself to is more quality or your guest or whatever you're going to do and they see it, shout out to Deuces, also from Geek Set. Like when we talk about a different form of consistency, even though he is doing it every week, but he's getting guests every single time he drops that YouTube video that just make you go, wow, I got to listen to this interview. That's the form of consistency too, but it helps you develop with your audience, man. And so I think it's also important to think about how you want to build that consistency. You have to sometimes you have to build too. So you have to set your steps up in a way that's going to help you stay on track, build a schedule, content schedules and calendars, which is something Tia brought to me, is awesome for people that need that. So don't be afraid to use those tools, and also consistent in your engagement game. That's something that I've admittedly fallen off from in 2020. I used to be one of the best at being engaged on social media all the time. Now I think that I've adapted from that, even though I'm not as consistent on social media as I once was at one point, I still engage. I talk to my listeners. We reach out. I go off ideas and topics that they have. Some of the topics that have come into this podcast is because my listeners have wanted to hear my perspective on it. So I keep that ability to engage and whatever else as well. So it's a lot of things that I think me being consistent has helped with overall, if you can't tell in my podcast journey. And so that's just what I wanted to spend some time. That's been on my mind, is like, what separates you? What makes you different? And, you know, for example, like, and this, I swear, this isn't to brag. This is just to talk like about how consistency has helped me, because I like to put practical reasons why I think consistency is important. One of the ways consistency has helped me is I'm syndicated on a few different radio stations. This podcast is. And now they're not huge radio stations. They're smaller radio stations, but it still has helped me grow. But those radio stations wouldn't have been after me or interested in airing my content if they didn't know that they were going to get something from me every single week to air. If they had to worry about, oh, what days or whatever this is going to air, that would have been a problem. So I think that consistency level has helped me as well, for sure. Shout out to Mile High Radio for real, which, you know, that deal came through and has really, really helped me a lot. So that's it, man. That's all I had to say. I just wanted to point out the facts of being consistent and why that helps instead of hurts and everything going on there. But yeah, that's all that's been on my mind. So we're going to go ahead. We're going to take a break. We're going to get into the Cookie Chronicles. For the watchers on YouTube, the next video up will be the Cookie Chronicles. Somebody pointed that out, how I film my transitions, like, because it is mainly a podcast. And then they're like, okay, the video ended. What do you mean, what's next? So next video, Cookie Chronicles, which she has a special message for you guys. So check that one out. And then after that, we get into the conversation with James Jackson, a YouTuber, one of many YouTubers to start coming on the podcast. I look forward to talking to you guys. I'll see you guys on the other side of that.
Welcome to Technical File, the sports podcast you never knew you needed.
It's your boy, T-I-M-K-I-N-Z, the number 3, a.k.a. Go-Go Power Ranger. Yeah, this is the Black Ranger. It's me, a.k.a. Mr. Give It To Me. It's Ash Ketchum in his bed.
Bed. I am the Eric J.
Only known as
the Eric J.
And I'm Camille, point guard of the crew, the real life Tifa Lockhart, the girl next door, you know, holding it down for all the women who love sports.
And it's your boy K Harris, the gentleman.
The gentleman.
Also known as K Diddy.
Take that.
But better known as the people's
Jabroni.
And that's us. I mean, we four friends come together every week to talk about the biggest stories in sports with our own flair to it. Let me tell you, you ain't never heard a sports podcast that's entertaining before.
Damn straight.
So check us out every Wednesday. Get at us.
Welcome to the Cookie Chronicles segment here on the Awakened Soul Podcast. And today, this week, is dedicated to the Awakened Soul and King Hayes, the King of Content. Now, if you've been paying attention, then you know that this is his third year anniversary for the Awakened Soul. And so this is just going to be dedicated to him. From me, the First Lady, to you, King Hayes, I just want to say how much I love and appreciate you for all that you do. And not just in the podcasting world, just, you know, on a personal level. Like, we've been great friends over the years, and you've helped me personally and with podcasting. Like, podcasting has been a big thing for both of us. And we met so many years ago, just trying to climb the podcasting ladder. But you've helped me so much, and you've climbed that ladder really, really fast. And you've done an awesome, awesome, superb job with the Awakened Soul. Again, kudos and congrats for last week when you hit almost 40,000 downloads in 30 days. Like, that is fucking huge. Let's keep the momentum going here. But thank you for all that you do. Thank you for bringing your thoughts and your crazy twisted mind to the Awakened Soul and helping so many people with their personal lives through the messages that you give. And also helping other content creators, you know, perfect their craft. Like, you're very good at helping other people learn the business, you know, and making it a business and helping them with equipment and doing your Saturday lives that people love and look forward to. And just all of your advice is just amazing. Like, you're amazing. And I'm really, really, really grateful to have known you and to have been a part of the Awakened Soul. Again, thank you so much for inviting me on back in December to do the Cookie Chronicles segment and bringing me back into podcasting. Because if people don't know, I was gone for a minute from August of last year up until January. I was gone from podcasting, and I didn't quite know when I was going to come back. It took for Hayes to like reach out and say, hey, you know, I would love for you to do a segment of Cookie Chronicles on the Awakened Soul, and then put me on blast, okay, like complete blast on the first episode, letting me know that I can do it and that you believed in me and that I had great talent. And it was just good to hear those things reiterated, especially from someone as esteemed as yourself. So I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart and the depths of my soul for inviting me on and including me in your world. And even for Love Less Than Badass, just thank you for everything. You're just overall an awesome person. And so congratulations on your third year with the Awakened Soul. Congratulations on your 39,000 downloads for the past 30 days. I think that was for June. And kudos to everything that you're doing and you're about to keep doing. So everybody, shout out Hayes on the Awakened Soul podcast page on Instagram, also in the group that he has on Facebook. And if you're a content creator and he has helped you in any way, shape, or form, or encouraged you, giving you ideas for your platform, make sure you give Hayes his flowers while he is here. Let's not wait until something happens to say how much we appreciate him and all that he does with the Awakened Soul and all of his other platforms and his hope. All right, you guys? All right, so this was short and sweet. I just wanted to make this dedicated to Hayes and the Awakened Soul. And I'll see y'all next week. Bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? We have a special first-time guest in the building that I'm about to introduce. This interview's been like a month or two in the making, so I'm glad we were finally able to bring it to you guys. We have Mr. James Jackson himself in the building, man. What's going on, bro?
What's going on, man? How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I can't complain, man. And what a time. I guess everything works out for a reason, right? Because when we originally did this, when we started planning this, I think it was before the Canon R5 was officially announced and we had like any videos from it. And then we have the Sony A7S III coming out. But yeah. Before we get into tech and talking about all that, I want to talk to you, man, just about you. Like we talked a little bit before we officially started recording, your creative journey, man, getting into YouTube more heavily. And just what that looks like, because I think we live in a time now, like with everything going on, that people are starting to find their creative lanes. They're starting to find the importance in streaming, and they're taking that chance on starting that YouTube channel. So I think it's important to like bring creative journeys to people so where they can hear it, man, and digest it. So like what was yours, if you want to share it?
Yeah, man. So I've kind of been basically been doing like freelance video work for about 7 years now. Dabbled in some AV. I still do AV work, but a lot of it, I was always into filmmaking, so I was just freelancing for a while. And then, you know, when I had a previous job, I was just like, you know what, let me just try to find ways to start making some little side money, some passive money. So I already had a YouTube channel, but I never really did anything about it. But then I just started just doing like little vlogs and things like that. And I just, cause I always love talking about films. I watch every YouTube, like all the major YouTube, like video content creators channels, read up on all the specs and all the techs and everything. And, you know, I was coming across people who were just like wanted to learn more. So, and I just started like chatting with them, and I was just like, hey, maybe I'll just start doing this more on a YouTube channel. And it started off really slow. And then like Blackmagic came out with the Pocket 4K. Mm-hmm. And I was like one of the first to actually get the camera.
Okay.
So, and that's sort of where everything sort of took off, where I was just, where I just really loved like getting in and being able to share what I know about cameras and what I know about video production and filmmaking in general. Because I don't try to just do anything just about cameras. I actually also try to get more people learning about lighting, post-production, color grading, things like that, to can sort of help out. So, because at the end of the day, to me, it's like, if I can help more people, you know, get creative, especially now with the pandemic, want to get more people to get themselves into sort of get into more of the creative space with YouTube, even Instagram. Instagram is starting to grow a little bit more of sort of a content creation. I feel like that's something that I can just like at least try to sort of help more people, and sort of people like you and me, you know, people color like you and me, try to get more in space to help, you know, give themselves some other streams of income. So
definitely. And that's good, man, to have the perspective of wanting to actually help people, and especially like people, because while YouTube is a huge place and there's people of all shapes, colors, sizes and everything in the spectrum, like I feel like there's really only a few prominent Black YouTubers, right? And so I remember the first video I ever saw of yours was you were doing a test of the GH5 outside. I don't even remember where you were or whatnot. That was the first one I watched. And at that time, like, that was like, because I'm a Lumix person through and through, like almost every camera except the Sony A6400 I use has all been Lumix. And so like me searching through videos, it just wasn't that many people of color talking about it. So definitely like at that point I was like, all right, yeah, I'm gonna follow this guy. So that was even before like the podcast and everything. So
yeah, I think I know which one you're talking about. It was that's when HLG, they just put the firmware out for the HLG.
Exactly.
And everybody was sort of, because that's when HDR, people were really starting to try to learn more about HDR, because when at that time it was like a big old like Wild Wild West in terms of HDR content, and nobody really knew what was going on. So I was just like, you know, so yeah, that's actually, I think, still my biggest, like my biggest view video on YouTube right now.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, because it's like, yeah, the GH5 was very popular at the time in HLG. It was just coming out, but yeah, it's a beautiful time as a filmmaker, content creator right now, man. Like you said, like I think we'll definitely talk about the R5 because there's some news that just broke. A lot of stuff happened today.
Yeah.
That even shifted my viewpoint of the R5 particularly. And we'll definitely talk about the A7S 2. I'm sorry, 3. Yeah. Sorry. I keep losing track of all these numbers on these cameras.
Yeah.
But yeah, still, you got Blackmagic with their cameras, Zcam, obviously Panasonic with the, you know, even with their Micro Four Thirds or even with like the S1 and the S1H. So there's options galore everywhere right now. The only excuse is just people not going out and doing content. Like, there is no reason why you can't go out and make good content. Yeah. Or at least just go out to just give something passionate.
Yeah, at this point in time, like it's so much stuff out here, and so at different price ranges too, where you can really go out and make content. I think something that, because I'm podcast, I just started getting into like the video and YouTube thing more consistently in the last year or so. But I think with podcasting, we're starting to see the benefit of video and podcasting. And so like with that, like it just added another layer to creativity. And so like I know I was me and like in our little podcasting circle, it was me and another guy named Dan. We were kind of the first to consistently use video. But now over this quarantine, like people are coming and hitting me up. I'm like, I'm not a professional videographer. Like I'm still new to this. But the questions definitely come up and you see people starting to pay more attention to the tech. And, you know, some of it is really expensive in $3,000-$4,000 range. But really, at this point now, you can find really good cameras for much less than that if you're just starting and just wanting to do the sitting head type, talking head type thing. So, you know, there's content from that you are equipment you can go from all over the spectrum to use for real.
No, totally. I mean, like I think it was like, especially podcasts, it's amazing how funny how podcasts sort of blew up. Cause I remember I was like just checking out the Rodecaster, like in the early stages of COVID. Uh-huh. And I was like, okay, maybe I'll get it. But I was like, this time I started hearing the rumors of the R5. So I was like, I'll wait for the, and then it was gone for like a month.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what the heck? So everybody just decided to just start doing podcasting. It was like, well, we're home. Might as well just start doing podcasting.
Yeah, that's how it was for me too with the A10 Mini, because I had planned on ordering one forever. It was before COVID. And then luckily they announced the A10 Mini Pro and I was like, okay, I'll wait for it. And I pre-ordered one from Adorama and it took 2 months for it to get to me. I was like, shit, this is crazy, man.
Yeah. Look, I don't want to knock Adorama or B&H or those big companies because they are great little stores that just picks things up. My only problem is that I never try to pre-order. First of all, I don't think I've ever pre-ordered any product that I've bought. The thing that I've always done is look at local or smaller camera stores and video-centric stores to see when they have it. Because a lot of them put like one or two items on Amazon. Mm-hmm. So if you're quick and you find it, you can get it when they first initially come out. That's actually how I got the Pocket 4K is I waited till it came available. And then like a small store like off Long Island had one available on Amazon. And that day I just grabbed it. And while everybody was still waiting pre-orders, and I remember I got somebody home. I was like, wait, you never pre-ordered? I was like, no. So for everybody out there, check your mom and pop stores and always check your mom and pop stores first. See if you can try to get in because nobody really goes to them. Everybody always tries to go to the big stores. But if you go to your mom and pop store first, odds are you could probably get it pretty soon. That's actually, I know you know Simon, the Ordinary Filmmaker.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he just put up a video that he just got his R5 in today. He just did the unboxing.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. because he called like his local camera store and just basically they put him on the list and he was like number two or number three on the list. So as soon as he was like got so as soon as that happened, he got it. So yeah, Always go local first.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Mm-hmm. So the last thing that I want to talk about before we get into like the tech and the cameras and everything is, so you have your own production company. And I started before COVID, like actually taking jobs, and I had a couple of weddings scheduled and everything. But like somebody who maybe is a starting out photographer and wants to figure out how to like get themselves out there or whatever, like what were the kind of steps that you took or any suggestions or anything you could offer somebody who's starting that journey themselves?
Sure. The first thing I would say is you got to build your portfolio, Well, first, actually, let me double back. The first thing I would say is make sure you really know what your brand is so you can find ways to make sure you stand out. So one of the things of us, my company is called D-Luminous Productions. And the main thing with us is we're about, you know, uplifting and telling the stories of people of color. We are like our thing is like being vocal. We want to make sure we deliver something to a more of a minority group that doesn't necessarily get the quality content in terms of quality video that they normally get.
Okay.
So that was sort of my brand, and that's sort of been sort of what's been successful for us and what's been getting people to start working with us. So just knowing your brand is the first thing I would say. The second thing I would say is obviously if you don't have a portfolio, you got to do some free work. And also know the market you want to be in and get free work in there. And the easiest way, you can all go and do free work, but there's a way to do free work and then there's not a way to do free work.
Okay.
But I say the best way is like, if you know people who have, if you have friends that have their own business or have something unique and something that you enjoy yourself, maybe you've got the service or done products with them, do some free work for them. I recently did that with a friend of mine who has a steaming cleaning company. And, you know, the video turned that way and all of a sudden it's blown up and now people are coming more towards me asking sort of like what type of video service we can provide. But the thing is just the key is just finding different ways to get your name out there, get your brand out there. So it's a hustle. It's a hustle industry. So the more you can get yourself out there and the more you can make yourself known, the better you're going to be, the more successful you're going to be. That is basically my suggestions.
Well, there you go, man. Y'all heard it from him. Do it. Listen. I got way more advice than what I can offer you guys. But let's get into the tech. Let's get into the equipment, the cameras, man.
Yeah, let's get into it, man.
Because this is just the way that the last 24 to 48 hours have unfolded have just been crazy. Like between really it's like the last couple of weeks or so, like ever since the official release and people started getting the R5 in their hands, and of course overheating was the story there. Sony A7S3 got announced yesterday. Actually started popping out the day before. It was really weird reviews. Some overheating stuff came out, and then today, like you alluded to, more Canon R5 news, man. So whereas like as it all has kind of sits right now, where are you at with everything that's going on, I guess to say?
I will tell you this right now. This morning, if you follow me on my channel, we got to start out with the R5 first, because that's really what kicked all this off. Yeah. The R5 and the R6. Like these were these big hyped up cameras, and because obviously the specs were like really, they were, Canon was really coming with something that they typically weren't doing, especially with the R5 with 8K video. So of course they finally officially announced it. And then of course they also mentioned there's overheating problems.
Yeah.
And that sort of spiraled the whole thing with heating. And then a couple of the ambassadors of Canon mentioned, yeah, there's overheating. And then more of the actual testers actually got in and started testing it and really putting it on the pressure. And yeah, we started learning more that there's some issue. There was a really amount of concerns with overheating. And then Sony timed it up with the A7S coming out. Right now, it's so interesting because before this morning, I would have told you I'm not concerned with the overheating of the R5, mainly because it's just me personally and how I shoot. And how I shoot is sort of like I always know what I want to shoot. So I go and just shoot only what I need. And then so I always shoot and then I stop turn the camera off. So the overheating was never a concern to me. And also I was reading up on ways that you could sort of manage the heat with it's with external batteries, external recording. So I was like, you know what? There's going to be some ways. And also people are going to try to find solutions. And we already heard that already with Tilta announcing that they have some sort of cooling kit for the R5. So I wasn't concerned. Then Armando's video dropped. Yeah. That was the first part. I don't know. You saw that video?
I saw some. I didn't get a chance to finish it yet. Yeah, I saw some of it though.
So yeah, the big thing that all of a sudden that really sort of set it in tone was the fact that they were just sort of getting in and setting up, and then when they turned it on to start recording AK for the videos that he released. By the way, that Few Good Men scene he put out.
Oh my, Armando is amazing.
The actors,
man,
were awesome.
Yeah,
the actors were awesome on that. So I gotta say, I get a credit to the actors and good job for Armando for that. But apparently they only had a few minutes to record 8K because they were originally going to plan to shoot 8K, but then they only got a few minutes because they were setting up and making sure getting everything ready, and then they had to shoot the rest in 4K. And the thing that really said, okay, went from not really to start, okay, this is serious, was the fact that he mentioned that when you go out of HDMI, because this was the whole argument I was making up until this point, that you can go out of HDMI and you shouldn't have to deal with overheating as much. Mm-hmm. But apparently the heat management that's in the R5 is disabled when you send a clean signal out of the R5. So meaning it heats faster without the heat management portion of it. So that's when I was like, okay, so yeah, this is problematic. And yeah, I was just like, okay. And now news broke that Canon's actually recalling their cameras.
Which is crazy, man. This is the only thing that I could compare this to is, I don't know if you're a Samsung or Apple user, but when Samsung dropped the Galaxy Note 7, I believe it was, and they started having blowing up and they had to recall all of the units. Mm-hmm. And it's not that bad yet. Let me just make it clear. It's not quite that bad yet, but it reminds me that this is like the biggest thing that has happened in the tech world in a while. But go ahead, continue. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. What I was going to say is, look, it's not like the camera is completely unusable for video. But the key things that were making it the selling points is what's being problematic right now. Because the 4K, because you still, from what everybody has said, if you record normally in 4K, the normal 4K, there's no heating issue whatsoever. Yep. And even though everybody keeps saying it's nowhere near as good as the oversampled 4K or even the 8K, which obviously that's expected, I was still hoping like, okay, but nobody has said it is bad. That nobody has said that normal 4K is bad. In fact, everybody said it's basically either on par with the EOS R or slightly better. So I was just like, okay, I had no problems with the image quality of the EOS R at that point. So I was thinking, okay, maybe I'll just shoot some 8K, like still, because I was only going to use 8K for like very specific reasons, like multiple, so I can use for stock footages and master shots and maybe some reframings. But that was really it. I wasn't planning to do whole projects in 8K with that. But hearing that Armando was like just in a few minutes of just trying to set it aside to just get things set up, yeah, that's a lot of concern. Apparently it's concerned enough that Canon has basically called it back. And this is one of the biggest fears I had when I don't know if you saw the video I posted, like when they first announced the C300 Mark III, and then they sort of brought all the specs of the R5. Mm-hmm. I was like, as long as they just be themselves in terms of like reliability, they were going to be fine. They were going to be great. It was going to be great cameras. But I was like, because there was at that point, nobody in the market was competing with them. So I was like, look, just don't rush it. If it seems like there's going to be problems, just take the time with it because you only have one shot at this. And they did. It's looking like that's not how they went. So I'm not sure exactly how it's going to be with the R5. I still have my pre-order. But we'll see how things go, especially since now there are starting to recall them. So,
yeah.
And then there's the A7S, there's the A7S3.
Yeah, which, before we get to the A7S3, I just want to say one thing on about the Canon R5 is that, I want to ask a question. Do you think, did they shoot too high for the downsampled 8K? And the only reason I say that is because this is really Canon's only, second or third generation completely mirrorless camera. So this, for them, this is still, this mirrorless, completely mirrorless camera game is still fairly new. And we've had the 6K downsampled sensors in like the Sony A6400 and A6600 for a while now. Do you think that maybe Canon tried to aim too high going for 8K right away? Should they have done like a down sampled 6K type thing that could have, I mean, it's kind of impossible to know what all is causing these overheating issues, but you have to think like just going from having 4K sensors that you were cropping to now completely uncropped 8K sensors, like, okay, maybe you should have tried for 6K first. What do you think about that?
I mean, I felt like if there was, I don't know. I can't honestly say I know. All I will say is that they clearly felt they were confident enough that they could aim for it. Because, I mean, it's not like we haven't seen it before. Sony has done this as well, just not to the degree that Canon has done it. Their A7R lines are essentially their 8K sensors.
Yeah,
and you can downsample, though. I don't know if it's completely oversampling. I believe in 24 is completely oversampled, but where you oversample the sensor and get a much sharper image. 4K image. Yeah. But I feel like it's definitely doable. I just don't know. I think they really underestimated the heating system. I was thinking, okay, maybe they would come with like some sort of fan and like the battery grip, like put a fan in the battery grip and then use that. Cause that's what I was saying. I was like, yeah, just put a fan in the battery grip and like use that to circulate the heat. But that's not, it looks like that's not what they're going to do. It looks like they're maybe building like a mount system that will create like a passive unit for it, which we'll see. We'll see. I don't know to answer, but to answer your question, I don't know. I honestly don't know if they were reaching too much. I can't knock them for trying to go the distance.
Yeah.
Especially after so many people have spent years getting on them for not going the distance. Like, okay, I'm like, I can't knock you for trying, but I also feel like you also set a standard for a lot of people like me who shoot on their cinema line of cameras.
Yeah.
That you have the one thing that we always felt is that they may not have given you everything you needed, but at the very least they didn't give you everything you wanted, but they at least gave you what you needed and not had to give you they didn't give you bloated stuff. Like there's a couple companies that will just bloat you and throw some stuff at you. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why are you giving me this when this is not usable?
Yeah.
Like the one that comes to mind is prior to the A7S III was Sony cameras. Like they had S-Log 3 in all their cameras, but I'm like, why are you throwing this in here when it's an 8-bit? I'm like, all your cameras are 8-bit. Even when we go out, it's 8-bit. There's no point of this. Why are you keep throwing this in here? So,
yeah,
but at the same time, it's just, so yeah, I'm just like, I can't fault them for trying, but I feel like if they were going to go it, they should have really I always say they should have just given this more time, at least now. Cause I know a lot of people have seen me as like one of their biggest defenders. But they definitely, based on seeing what things are now, especially everything that's come out, it looks like that, yeah, they should have given more time for it.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts, man?
I mean, the R5 on paper is like, it's damn near the perfect camera. Shout out to Casey with Conspiracy Theories. Damn near shut down his channel. I think if these overheating issues get fixed, as someone who owns the S1H, like just to have reliable autofocus in a sensor that does, even if I never touch the AK, is worth it for what I do. So like I've always said that I'm more than likely I had planned on getting the R5 at some point. I'm not in a rush because I do have the S1H, so I'm in a place where I can do some jobs, save up for it, and eventually that was my plan for that to be my camera. But I think that, you know, all these I'd be crazy right now to pre-order it. I need to wait to get some more hands. I don't understand why they didn't have a fan in it. Even regardless, like when you do something in 8K, like and because the S1H showed that you can have a fan and still keep the weather sealing. I don't know. Maybe they just don't. I don't know if Panasonic has a patent on that technology right now. I don't know. I don't get into those type of details. But because it's possible. Even if you would have took another year, you still would have, like, this camera is so advanced. If they would have pushed this camera back another year to figure out how to get the fan and the weather sealing, it still would have crushed the market. Like, it still, it would have been the best thing Canon's released in the mirrorless.
I totally agree. Like, here's the thing. If there's a way to resolve the overheating issue, this camera is pretty much going to be hard to beat.
Yeah.
Just... like, because even with all the overheated, like, I was watching Jared as he was switching between the S1H and the R5, and the difference is almost immediately noticeable. Exactly. It's like, the image out of that thing is so beautiful. I totally understand, like, if people want to say, hey, it's crazy to pre-order, and it is. Right now, I can totally understand that. I'm just like, if that overheating can figure out an overheating, this camera is... it's going to be a problem, but right now it's a problem for a different reason.
Exactly. And I love your idea. I hadn't even thought about that. A battery grip that somehow incorporates a fan right there. You've improved the problem. So, but yeah, I don't want to feel like I'm trying to buy, cause again, this was the camera. I'm a Lumix person only because that was the first camera the G7 was the first camera I ever bought to do YouTube videos, and so I just bought into the Panasonic system. I love their colors, I won't lie, but the autofocus, as I got into like more doing more than sitting head and actually taking jobs, I'm just like, I can work around it, but it's frustrating as hell. I'm not gonna lie, Panasonic's
did you ever see my video on the S1H?
Yeah I did.
Yeah, but I like the camera, but when I was just trying to deal with that autofocus system, it's depth from defocus. I wish they would just stop trying to push depth from defocus and just really move on to a new system, because that's one of, if they could just resolve that, just like if Canon just resolves this overheating issues, if Panasonic just resolves that autofocus issue somehow, it can be like a really true amazing. I mean, it's still a great camera, but it can be a really amazing camera. And same with the R5, like, if you look at the R5, everything about it screams good. Like, the IBIS is really good. Like, the few times I've seen it, yeah, it has some wobble to it. But for, like, at least for me, where it's more like more pans, slow pans, and more like try to do more tripod shots and more pans, not trying to do any crazy running. Because at the end of the day, no IBIS is going to replace a gimbal, period.
None.
But the IBIS was like top tier. Autofocus is all, you know, is top tier, and they've made it better. So throwing in that, especially throwing in 8K and comparing also with those RF glasses, especially like that Bazooka 28-70 f2 lens, like, this camera was in position to do damage. And but yeah, it's not ready for prime time, clearly.
Yeah, hopefully they can get it figured out, man, because that's going to be the camera. And I honestly feel like in buying that camera, even if for some reason they have to do a recall, and like I said, they take a few months to figure it out, it's still going to be the most advanced camera on the market, period. It just is. It's so far advanced that it's going to take these other companies a whole nother generation to even think to match it. And by then, hopefully Canon's on to something bigger and better. So this, you know, we'll see. Canon's going to, I do have faith that they're going to figure it out in some way. Like, they aim for the moon. You have to get it. But let's get into this A7S III.
All right, let's get into it.
So a camera that within 12 hours of being announced was dubbed the perfect camera for video by a lot of YouTubers. I've never seen people flock to a camera. So even the R5, people were more doubtful. People were ready to anoint the Sony A7S III as the perfect camera the moment that it was made official. And to me, it just, looking at it, it was like, okay, I get it. Like, especially, I wonder if this didn't come out in the shadow of the R5 and the overheating issues, would people have jumped on that bandwagon so quickly? But now it also has overheating issues. Now, there's been some reports that that overheating issue is only because they didn't change the overheat setting to high from low. Regardless of that, everybody who picks up the camera isn't going to think to do it, so it's going to have some overheating issues for some people. But I don't know, man. You tell me how you feel about, like, I would always say Gerald Undone is a reviewer that I trust. Like, I trust him wholeheartedly over anyone, any like single reviewer, because he goes so in depth on it on some of his reviews. But this was kind of the first time where I'm like, all right, Gerald, how didn't you find this? And at the same time his video drops, we got Dan dropping a video saying the camera overheats. It was like those videos dropped within like 30 minutes of each other. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. I love Gerald too. I was actually on his live stream when he was testing the R5, and I was testing the R5 when he was testing the R5 and R6. I love like just how technical it is. He definitely helps me consider a lot of cameras that I look into. But yeah, it was interesting, like how it just, the reaction was so different when Canon themselves, let's be clear, Canon themselves came out with like, yes, we have some overheating issues. And of course, Peter McKinnon came out. They put it in their own like release launch video that the Canon was overheating issue. And all of a sudden, like everybody was ready to declare it dead. The Sony comes out, and I even gave credit to Sony on my video on my first initial thoughts video. They were smart. I thought they, at first, when they happened, when they delayed the release, I was like, okay, why are you conceding to Canon? If clearly you feel you have the better camera, why are you conceding to Canon? But it ended up being smart, because maybe Sony got some insider whiff about this issues with the Canon.
Yeah.
And they tailored their marketing to really point people to put a contrast between the Canon, the R5 and the R6. And the A7S3. So I gotta give him kudos for that. And of course, yeah, overheating. And let me respond to the overheating. Dan, who did that testing and got the overheating. First of all, Hugh Brownstone from Three Blind Men and the Elephant also.
Oh, that's another person I trust. I don't question Hugh at all. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. And but they both experienced. But the other thing was Dan actually did a second test.
Okay.
And he addressed that specific thing that really probably was like the heat management option. He actually turned it on and the same result happened The Sony A7S3 overheated faster than the R5. It seems like the R5, while it overheats faster, it seems to be more self-contained, to where no matter the environment, it's going to be roughly the same. Whereas the A7S3, at least, now granted, this could be a pre-production model that Dan had. Mm. It's almost certain this is pre-production model, since the camera doesn't even come out to the end of September.
Yeah.
But it seems like the A7S3 doesn't have that same thing, where it's like if it's in very hot conditions, that it doesn't manage the heat a lot better. It seems to manage heat better in more well-controlled environments than it does in very extreme convertible environments, which, I mean, Philip Bloom even acknowledged it during his live stream chat with Carl, Pro AV TV. So yeah, there's overheating problems, but the reaction is interesting how reaction. Yeah. Like, Sony, Canon overheats, see, Canon, total fail, knew it. Oh, somebody says Sony overheats, totally discredit, bring me their heads. like, to me, I like Canon for the simple fact that I've worked mainly with their cinema cameras. But the cameras that they tend to work with, and even from people that use their DSLRs, they're so reliable. So to me, that's the reason why I shoot with the C200, but I'm not like loyal to Canon. I'm not loyal to Canon. I'm not loyal to any camera company. I don't care who ultimately triumphs. I don't care if Sony ends up outbeating Canon or Canon outbeats Sony. Because neither one of them are paying me. So why should I care if who's going to win if I'm not going to pay? I'm paying them for their camera products.
Exactly.
So I don't care. Canon, Panasonic, Blackmagic, ZK, whatever camera company. The point is, I'm like, I don't feel the need. I just, I just don't like, I just wish people were more more consistent, but I've never seen such a glaring response from commentaries from one camera company to another. And, but let's talk about the A7S III right now. I think it's a, look, it's a really good camera. I think it's a really good camera, potentially a great camera. My only concern is that I personally feel that it's going to be a camera that I may be having for like a couple years because of its 12 megapixel. It doesn't go with higher resolutions. And if I want to move into trying to do oversampling and higher resolution content, I don't have that option. So I'm eventually going to move away from it.
Yeah.
So whereas with the R5, yes, it has its problems, but if they can resolve these problems, that's a camera I see myself having for like 6-7 years.
Yeah.
So over, but yeah, the Sony is it's a really great, really solid camera. Is it 5 years worth of good, of greatness? That's the thing. Like if that camera came out like 2 years ago,
it would have been groundbreaking.
That camera would be like dominating. But now where a lot of the cameras are going into the resolutions that are offering internal RAW recording options, it feels like a moment in time camera for me, at least. Yeah. I don't know how do you feel about it?
I feel like if this would have released around the time of the original EOS R and maybe the S1H, it would have by far been the camera to blow everything out the water. Like uncropped 4K, well, it has a slight crop with a 1.1 crop, which isn't much.
That's not a crop. Yeah. I don't consider that really a crop. Yeah,
that's not bad at all. But then, like, to do the 4K at 120 frames per second, until the Canon R5, we didn't have a camera that did uncropped high frame rate 4K. Like, we didn't. So it would have been
full frame.
Yeah, full frame. So it would have been groundbreaking in that sense. It feels like a logical upgrade from the A7S II, but it doesn't feel like 5 years. Like, if this is what you guys have developed in 5 years, where Canon did what they did and the S1H did what it did and other cameras as well, Blackmagic, yeah, and what they did with the 6K.
I mean, Blackmagic has a 6K.
Yeah.
Hell, Blackmagic, the Ursa Mini Pro G2 shoots 150 frames per second in 4K.
That's crazy.
So the Z cams, the full frame Z cam F6 shoots 120 frames per second in 4K.
See?
So there's a lot of cameras that can shoot 4K 120 frames per second. This is just the first full frame without a major crop that can do it in 120 frames per second, which is still, you got to give credit, Sony credit for work. Credit where credit's due. They did deliver something that, technically the R5 did it first, but Sony's bringing something that not a lot of cameras have right now. So I got to give them credit for that. I think for the moment, it's a solid, solid camera. I just don't know if it's right for me. That doesn't mean it's not right for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of people I look at, I'm like, they're going to love that camera. They should go for that camera.
Especially if you have a bunch of E-mount glass. Like, if you have a bunch of lenses for E-mount.
Oh, yeah. If you are in the Sony system right now, I totally think this is the no-brainer camera.
Yeah.
The absolute no-brainer camera.
For sure. What were you about to say, though? I know I cut you off there. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. What I was going to say was that I don't know if the Sony A7S is right. I'm going to still get it to just rent it, test it. Hell, I may buy it myself, depending on what happens with the R5. I don't know where I may be. I don't know where I'm going to be in terms of a small body camera, because that was the main thing I'm trying to look for right now. Because I have my main cinema camera. I have my B camera, pocket cinema camera of 6K. I was really looking for like a nice camera that can do stills for BTS and even be a potential B camera, maybe C camera for major projects or even anyways. But and I was looking at the R5 because it's like it ticked every single box that I was looking for. Mm-hmm. But depending on what the R5 is, I don't know what else is out there that ticks the boxes that I want. So the A7S 3 may be that one. I don't know yet, but right now it's just, I'm not sure. Like, I think it's a great camera for a lot of people. I'm just not sure it's a great, it's the right camera for me.
That makes sense.
Personally.
Do you plan on getting it to test it?
Oh yeah. Okay. Oh no, I'm going to get the A7S rented and test it. It would be insane. First of all, just as a gear review, you know, camera review content channel, I would be a fool not to get it.
Yeah.
So, but just, you know, to see how it would fit in, just to see how it works, and also maybe potentially see it in my workflow. Yeah. I'm definitely going to rent it out. And by the way, I would tell everybody, you know, definitely just try cameras out, try them out, rent them, see them if it works for you. But yeah.
All right, cool. I think overall my, like, where I'm sitting at with the A7S III is that it's a, especially if you're in the E-mount system, it's a no brainer. If you're looking to get into, like, make an upgrade, if you have a 3-4 year old camera, and you may be looking into moving to a different system, I don't know if I would suggest it, just because it's like at that price point, if I'm trying to spend money, it's something that I hope that I don't have to upgrade for at least 3 to 4 years. And I just, you know, I get it, and it's been proven the 12 megapixels looks great. It's a sharp image, whatever. But in every test that I've seen, the R5 blows that image quality out the water. So I just hope that they can get that right, man.
Yeah, no, that was the other thing. And not just the R5. I also wonder, well, what is Sony now going to do with the rest of their lineup?
Yeah.
Because especially with the A7S at the price point that it is at $3,500. Like, I know somebody was saying, hey, just make the A7R, just make that just pure still camera and make that just in the A7, the good hybrid camera that's master of none. But that's what they already are right now, essentially.
Yeah.
So I'm like, so basically you're saying just do nothing. Just have Sony do what they do with their RX lines. It's basically just release the same camera with just one, two little changes.
But
at the same time, I'm looking like, well, Sony's kind of opened the door with the dual card slots where you could do CF Express Type A.
We didn't talk about that either. That's an amazing, like the multiple.
That was a genius move. Credit where credit due. That was a genius move where you can basically backwards compatible to both SDs and CF Express. I think that was a definite genius move on that part.
Yeah, definitely. That could be a game changer in the sense that maybe that's the new standard now, because people, CF Express, more expensive, faster write speeds, of course. And then I think a couple weeks ago, like, they plan on like making faster speed SD cards now. Like they're working out some new technology too. But the fact that you've now made your camera to where, regardless, it's future proof in at least the memory that it can use, and that's a great thing. I didn't even know that was possible to make dual slots that can take either SD or CF Express Type A. I think it is. That's genius.
Type A.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, because I know you could do it with XQD, because CF Express Type B is basically the same as XQD, which is like on the Nikons and the big Sony cameras, which is why I was so surprised why Sony didn't put like CF Express backward, go CF Express with the FX9. But that's a different story. I'm digressing. Mm-hmm. But since they opened that door with those two, with that backwards compatibility option, and the fact that, okay, we clearly know you have the media, you have the processor to deal with certain speeds. You clearly have the ability to do resolutions. Mm. And you already are able to do oversample resolution of 6K.
Yeah.
We already know that. You already do it with the A7 III. So are you now just not going to go 6K on the A7 III, even though we know you now have the media speed? You built the new codec, the new XAVC SI.
Yeah.
We know you have the codecs to do it. We know you have the media to do it. And we know you can oversample, so we know you can at least try to process it. So are you now not going to do that in order to protect the A7S III? That doesn't seem like Sony. That's not really Sony.
It's not a Sony move.
No. So I'm, for me, I'm just like, so I'm going to be interested to see what Sony does with the other ones of their cameras. Is Sony going to try to go 8K with the A7, with the next A7R, mm-hmm. with their video? I doubt they will. I don't think they will. I think seeing how Canon situation is right now, I think they're definitely going to try to take their time. Hopefully it's not another 5 years.
We can't wait another five. They may completely get left in the dust if they wait another 5 years to make an upgrade like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, but yeah, that you're right. That price at $3,500, you got the S1H and the R5 all in that same price. And look, image quality wise, I mean, again, I can't really speak fully about it because I haven't had both either the R5 or the A7S III in my hands personally. But just on the videos I've seen, it's on par with the R5. Mm. And the S1H is slightly better.
Yeah.
And it has slightly a better image quality. So it's really hard for, it's really, that's why I said it's really hard for me to go full into on the Sony when this camera, when there's so many other things in the market that can really, that can also suit the needs. How would you feel? Do you think, I don't think the card slots are big enough. Maybe they are, but do you think Panasonic may do something like they'll do a call in for like all the cameras and sort of reverse engineer the card slot to allow CF Express Type A?
I don't think they'll do a call. I think maybe they'll look into it with the G86, which reportedly is probably going to be their next camera. But I really think the next iteration of the S line is going to be. If they can get this time of flight autofocus that we've heard and it can mm-hmm. correct their depth from defocus system and they can eliminate the crop. Like honestly, the S1H with better autofocus, the dual card slots that can be used either way, even if they just do it 6K uncropped or whatever, mm-hmm. it's better than the A7S III to me without any other updates.
I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you. If Panasonic was just to solve that autofocus issues and find some way to give me an all live versions of their 6K modes, mm-hmm. I would totally buy the S1H. Because those were my big problems with the S1H was that the 6K modes, they're so annoying to deal with in post.
Bro, I tried it once. I've only shot one thing in 6K since I've had this camera. And my computer, I swear, looked at me and said, "Nah, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it."
I tried Resolve. I'm in DaVinci Resolve, and I literally dropped in DaVinci Resolve, and DaVinci Resolve just looked at me, just like, "Really, really? This is what really you're gonna give me this? Nah, we're just gonna sit here and look, but we're just gonna sit here and look stupid." Like that was my thing. It's like, if you can just resolve that, and I know ProRes RAW is supposed to sort of help that.
Yeah.
I have my beef with ProRes RAW. I don't know if you want to go into like about a little bit more on the ProRes RAW, because that was also something that just got like snucked in.
Yeah, and they waited till, wasn't it like a day or two before it was supposed to be released, and then say, "Oh, you know what? We're not doing it. It's not coming out."
Yeah.
People had already released their YouTube videos reviewing the ProRes RAW and everything, and then they're just like, "You know what?
Yeah.
It's not happening." And then like
Adamus,
like I think a representative from them said that, "Oh, well, we'll try to get like basically they're trying to look at it towards the end of the year now." It's like, "What the hell happened?" I don't get it, man.
Well, no, actually they just released it today, either today or yesterday.
Did they?
Yes.
Oh, they released shit.
They released it today or like yesterday. Like it was like either right after the A7S III or like the day of the A7 III or right after. Yeah. Just this little slide. I was like, "Oh, yeah, ProRes RAW. It's now in the S1H.
Oh, man, you gotta love this camera wars, man. It's crazy. It's just crazy.
But yeah, but But ProRes Raw, so I know a couple people have asked me, why is it that I have issues with ProRes Raw? My issue with ProRes Raw right now, and based on what I hear with Phillip Bloom, that may change, maybe. But my main issue is that it sort of misrepresent what Raw is. So the benefits of ProRes Raw right now is the fact that it's very compatible with a lot of machines. You can work well. The only, like, Italy it doesn't work with at all is DaVinci Resolve, which personal problem for me, but nonetheless, is that it's, you know, it plays back smoothly. You can play it even like when you're just clicking on it in like a folder, you can play it back. It's very, very, for a very, very uncompressed format, not throwing out as much information as it could, it's a less compressed format. So it still doesn't throw up as many, it doesn't burn through media cards as something like ProRes XQ444. It's basically a compressed version of ProRes XQ44.
Okay.
My issue comes on the RAW side. If you've worked, anybody that has sort of worked with a RAW format, whether if it's Redcore RAW, Canon RAW Lite, Blackmagic RAW, any whatever RAW you have, ProRes RAW does not give you control over certain metadata information that is like critical.
Okay.
The main ones is being you can't change the color temperature, the tint, or the ISO. So all of that is baked in.
That you almost defeats the purpose of RAW.
Exactly. That's why I was like, those are like the main things that we go for RAW. Every single one of the other RAW codecs I mentioned, you can do all of that. And then some. Like Canon RAW Lite, which is outside of Redcore RAW, my favorite one. You can change the color temperature, the tint, the ISO, the highlights, the gain, the lift, the gamma. You can change the gamma to whatever log curve you want, or 2/709 or Trek 2020. You can change the color science. Like, there's so much stuff you could basically do your whole color correction right in the RAW development tab. And this is mainly for DaVinci Resolve. You can change all of that and basically get like your color correction, everything right there. So then if you want to do like, you know, go with more of a creative look, you can basically use the node and make destructive changes there. With ProRes RAW, you only can change the exposure. So that's why I say that's my issue with it, because it's really not a RAW codec. But Phillip Bloom mentioned in his chat with Carl that there's this new plugin called Scratch, and basically it adds more metadata control to ProRes RAW, which is it gives you the white balance, it gives you the Kelvin, it gives you the tint, it gives you the ISO changes. Though the potential problem that I heard from them was that it's quite expensive. The plugin is quite expensive. And that there's some, I don't know if it's like a subscription pay, or it's like a large upfront pay, but from what their conversation was, it's a costly plugin, which seems silly to me that I have to pay for what a RAW codec should have.
Should be, yeah.
But clearly it is, because clearly ProRes RAW is RAW, it's sensor data, but Apple needs to get off their butts and actually give us the metadata controls. And then hopefully Apple, Atomos, and Blackmagic's beef can eventually like cool off where they both just work with each other's RAW codecs. But I don't think that's coming to happen for a while.
Yeah.
But that's otherwise, yeah, ProRes RAW would be an amazing option. But until I just can't recommend ProRes RAW for anybody that's looking for RAW codecs, like an actual RAW workflow, because that's not what is represented. And that's been my beef. But if you're someone that's just like, hey, I wouldn't mind having like a more compressed version of ProRes 444, then yeah, ProRes RAW is option. It's great.
Well, there you have it. I've never really worked with RAW again, because all I've had is Lumix cameras. I've never really worked with RAW. I haven't had a reason to yet. So I was looking forward to the RAW update, but we'll see. I'll definitely probably use it on a job whenever I get another one after COVID's over, man.
Yeah.
But what do you think? So like, just to kind of wrap everything up, like, we've gotten so many announcements between like the Sony ZV-1, the Lumix G100 or whatever that's called, to the Canon R5 and R6, the Sony. We got a damn 12K camera that was announced at one point. Like
12K, 60 frames per second, 8K, 110 frames per second, 4K, 240 frames per second.
Oh, God, man. What would be something that would completely catch you off guard? I've always said, just so I could get mine out the way, that Blackmagic, I think, is going to announce an 8K camera within the next year. It's going to happen. A pocket, I should say, one of their pocket line. What do you think? What do you think is the next one on the horizon? Because now everyone's just trying to top each other.
I mean, for a camera to surprise me, well, that's kind of hard. Blackmagic kind of just took that already with their 12K Ursa Mini Pro
casually camera. Announcing a 12K camera. Like,
yeah, like at that point, I'm not surprised anymore by anything. I honestly am not. So I'm just like, okay. I actually. Question is, I think Blackmagic will probably announce either a Super 35 8K pocket camera, mm-hmm. or they're going to do a full frame 6K
Ooh,
camera.
Okay.
But I think there will be now, most likely, I'm leaning towards more of the 8K. And simply because I mentioned this, and that is they've invested heavily in 8K content delivery. Mm-hmm. Like Blackmagic has invested heavily. Like all their, like, new Constellation equipment, these equipments that cost there's some Red cameras don't equipments that Blackmagic put out for 8K content delivery. Mm-hmm. They need the 8K bodies now to deliver that. So obviously the Ursa 12K is the first to sort of handle that sort of business. I think they're going to try to come with, I don't know if it's a pocket camera, maybe it's another, they may come with like a whole new lineup or something, or maybe like a revamp micro. I don't know if you remember the micro cinema camera that they had.
Wow.
But it's essentially, it was the Z cam before the Z cam. Mm. It's like this little box cube camera that was like designed for Micro Four Thirds. And that you could just pick up. It was literally the size of a golf ball. But it was just so annoying because you had to have all these little plugins and power cords that you had to string all together. But anyways, I think they may revamp that and deliver something like similar to what Zcam has in terms of body. Because I hope so. Because I love my Pocket 6K, but that body frustrates the hell out of me at times, especially with gimbals.
I can imagine that. I've never worked with a Blackmagic Pocket 4K or 6K. It's actually what I had planned on buying before the S1H was announced, but I can only imagine like what that would look like working on a gimbal, because it's just I don't know why I get it. They wanted like their cameras to have this unique look, and it's functional because like you can build it and kit it out, so that shape kind of makes sense to that. But it's just such an odd shaped camera, man.
Yeah. No. Like the thing is, it could still have worked for most gimbals. The issue is that the mount is off-centered. It's okay. Off-centered to the left. So every time you put a lens on it, you put more weight to the left side, which throws everything off. So, but yeah, I don't know what was surprised. Honestly, I don't know what would surprise me. Here's what one thing I want is, I guess what I'll say what I want in the future. I would like somebody to just deliver a small, compact 8K camera with like, industry-leading autofocus. I don't. Mm. Right now, the closest is surprisingly Red.
Yeah,
it's surprisingly Red with that Komodo Dragon. But I don't know if I. It's too. From what I've seen, it's too limiting for my taste. Like it's limited in terms of codecs. It's limited in terms of recording options, and what you can do using the full sensor readout. But I think if somebody, I don't know if who's going to try to take on 8K like Canon did, but I think if there's going to be somebody that will try to do that, it would be Blackmagic. It would be Blackmagic trying to push something in the smaller market. I just don't know. My guess, it would be a full Super 35 8K camera, if my guess.
They already have the sensor, so that's not the issue at all. Do you ever think Red... I know I keep saying this is the last one. This is the last question I'll present. Do you ever think Red gets into like the more consumer mirrorless game?
No, yeah. No.
Yeah.
I don't see Red. If you're asking me, would they go to like a full blown like stills video hybrid camera? I don't think so, because in their mind they've already have a hybrid camera, because their resolutions are so high. And their quality is so great that you could pull still images right out from their cameras.
Good point. But all right, man, is there anything left you got that you want to present before you tell them where they can find you and all that good stuff?
No, I think this has been a good conversation. Thank you for having me on, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, but y'all can find me on my channel, James Jackson Films. And, you can follow me also on Instagram at Mr. Jamie Black. And yeah, I'm just a small YouTube guy who just loves talking about film gear and film productions. So if you love that, check my channel out.
There you go, man. I love how excited you get with, like, you know, like some YouTubers, it becomes like business. Like, they just go through the ins and outs. You can tell, like, one thing that always keeps me coming back to you is that it feels like talking to like another tech friend when it comes to cameras, because you get excited, man. So I appreciate everything you do. Guys, go ahead and make sure you follow him and check him out. That's it, man. Peace.
Clear skies, white walls, sunset in my rearview as the night falls. Listening to old Kanye, feeling like new Kanye. My life in harmony like 2 1-years. Okay, I shouldn't have to tell you that I've been here. This is not a gimmick, please don't push me to my limit. I'll be getting tired of being friendly. I go hard until my tank is empty. I'm not really in the competition, no.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.